Good evening and welcome to this week's Gillespie. We have a jam-packed show for you guys this evening. It is our pre-CPAC show. It's going to be jam-packed, so we're going to get right into it, but I want to give you a rundown of who's going to be on tonight. We have Vice President of the National Right to Work Committee, Greg Murad. We have our CPAC segment with Amy Miller and Tabitha Hale, both ladies who you guys are familiar with, and our special Ask a Rhino segment, again, a mysterious rhino. Anyway, I want to get right down to it. Our first guest this evening is National Right to Work Vice President Greg Murad. Greg, thanks for being on the show this evening.
Happy to be here, Josh. Thanks.
Well, the obviously the big news in Indiana outside of the Super Bowl was the passage of Right to Work here in Indiana. And you guys had a lot to do with that. And in terms of getting in touch with our local legislators, informing them really of what is involved when a Right to Work bill passes, because there were a lot of misconceptions of the bill. The unions came in here and they did their best to really slam this piece of legislation. First of all, what made you guys target Indiana?
Well, Indiana was a state that, in our opinion, was ready for Right to Work. It's a part of what has become known as, unfortunately, as the Rust Belt, because so many manufacturing jobs have been lost due to the strong presence of a number of unreasonable labor unions. And couple that with growing strength of pro-Right to Work movement within the legislature. And we thought that Indiana was a state that that could become the next right-to-work state. And we've actually been at this for almost 10 years now in Indiana. The unions wanted to come in this year and start talking about how this is a new thing, and then it hadn't been properly vetted, et cetera, et cetera. But really, we've been forcing votes on this issue in the legislature for four cycles now. And cycle by cycle, people that voted wrong on right-to-work were replaced by the voters with people who promised to vote right on right-to-work. And that's really what put us in the position this year that we finally had so many pro-right-to-work legislators that we were able to get this thing over the finish line.
Well, I remember my first interaction with right-to-work. Actually, I was working for on the campaign for a legislator in northern Indiana, and she had been in the legislature, goodness, I think since 1995, even prior to that, I think, but she had a reliable Republican vote. She cast some votes that probably rankled a few of her constituents, but she was well enough liked that they kept on reelecting her. And I was tasked to work on part of her campaign, and lo and behold, I start hearing about this organization called Right to Work. I was like, what's this? What's this? I don't know. What is Right to Work? It sounded a little fishy to me initially. And my boss was like, you know, find out more about this group. I don't like the way this sounds. And lo and behold, we lost the primary by 3-1. And she was an incumbent legislator. And part of that had to do with our opponent's support of Right to Work. And I quickly got educated on what Right to Work was, and I thought, why isn't my candidate supporting this? This seems, you know, pretty logical.
Yeah, it's really a no-brainer of an issue. It's not a complicated issue. It just says that people shouldn't be forced to join a union as a condition of employment.
Now, why are the unions so against this? I mean, it's not like it's taking away jobs. All it is, like you said, we're not forcing anything.
No, well, the unions are against it because the forced dues money machine brings them in something like $120 million a year.
Wow.
That's not money they want to see put in jeopardy by people being able to actually choose whether or not to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
It's purely about money for them.
Well, now that Right to Work has passed here in Indiana, what other states are you guys setting your sight on? Obviously, Indiana is the 23rd Right to Work state. I believe the first since Oklahoma in 2002.
That's correct.
And, you know, hey, 10 years ago you got Oklahoma, 10 years later you get Indiana. Where is the fight going to be taken to next?
The most obvious next place to go would be New Hampshire. We passed it through the legislature there just a few months ago. Passed it through the legislature about a year ago, and just a few months ago had an attempt to override Governor Lynch's veto. came just a handful of votes short of the two-thirds needed to override the veto in the House. And
really?
Had they done it, we think we had the two-thirds we needed in the Senate. So we'll see what happens in the next governor's race, but I expect that right to work is going to be a pretty prominent issue in that governor's race. All of the major announced Republican candidates are pro-right to work.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that the Democrats, eventual Democrat nominee, will probably not be pro-right to work, but we will lobby all of them heavily. And I suspect that in the end, the voters out there are going to see that they're real close and all they need is a pro-right to work governor, and I think that's going to be a major issue in that race. If the pro-right to work candidate prevails, we could very easily be in a position to pass right to work in New Hampshire.
Well,
we're in a similar situation in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of other states that are not too far behind them.
Interesting. Well, I know that right to work is typically, at least the states seem to be all based in the South. Indiana seems to be the first Rust Belt state to really go forward. It seems like you guys are inching northern and western. But the one thing you mentioned was electing a right to work governor. When Mitch Daniels was first elected in 2004, he actually, in a sense, he didn't run against right to work, but he wasn't necessarily in favor of it.
Yeah, we have recently learned that he was making private commitments to a couple of labor unions that he would oppose it.
Well, and he came out and said that he was for it because changed his mind because he saw the needs of Indiana, how the economy has affected Indiana. How do you see the economy playing out in some of these other races in New Hampshire and Montana or in other states where you guys are going to be pursuing right to work?
Well, the economic factor is a very big one, especially when people are hurting and jobs are hard to find. It is all that much more important a tool to have in the arsenal for a state when trying to recruit new jobs. Consultant after consultant, the people that help companies choose where to expand or relocate have consistently told us and told various state legislative committees around the country that up to as many as half of their clients refuse to even consider the non-right-to-work states.
Is that
Indiana has so much going for it, and it is just a shame to see them stricken off of so many lists just for that one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the governor eventually came to recognize that.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, the unemployment rate—the unemployment rate was announced here in Indiana being at 9%. But as soon as right to work passes, Governor Daniels immediately is getting calls from businesses saying that they're willing to relocate to Indiana simply because right to work just passed, as you mentioned. I get the Democrats' sticking point. They can't get past unions. The unions are in their back pockets.
Or perhaps the other way around.
That's very true. Very true. I mean, goodness knows that Pat Bauer, the House Minority Leader here in Indiana, he received $73,000from unions alone in his re-election campaign in 2010. And mind you, he is in a safe seat. Pat Bauer has nothing to worry about in terms of losing to a Republican opponent just because of the way his district is put together and the strong union presence. Yet they line the coffers of his campaign war chest and the war chest of several other Democrat legislators here in Indiana. In fact, the money that went to Democrat legislators from unions was astronomical. I believe it was more than 10 to 20 to 1 in terms of what unions gave to Republicans or Democrats to Republicans.
And those numbers are pretty standard across the country in various states and at the national level as well. They overwhelmingly give to Democrats. And that's not, if the membership is voluntary, that's all well and good. If a union in a right-to-work state wants to give all their money to Democrats, I've got no problem with it,
mm-hmm.
As long as the dues are voluntary. But unfortunately, we're in a situation in 27 now of the states where the unions have the ability to confiscate money from people and then spend it on their pet politics that their members don't necessarily agree with. And they
really
point to the Supreme Court decisions that say that, yes, technically you're entitled to a refund of the portion of your dues that goes to politics, but they've got so many ways to get around that rule and hoops they make you jump through, and they one-hour windows once a year when you can object, and the office is closed that day, and all kinds of nasty stunts they have to get away with that allow them to continue extracting all of those dues from people and spending it on politics those people disagree with.
That is incredible. I didn't know those kinds of loopholes. That just seems, Yeah, obviously they're trying to milk and soak every last dues-paying dollar that they can get out of their workers. And their workers, they may not necessarily agree with the union's politics, and yet they are forced to support them.
Exactly, and frankly, they may not even agree with the union's contract negotiation. They're forced to support that too. You know, a contract that it bases all of the benefits on seniority does not help a junior worker that wants to work harder and smarter and be rewarded more. Mm-hmm. He is held back by that contract, and so they perpetrate this fiction that the union contract is this blessing to everybody that everybody should have to pay for, when in truth it is holding back the ones who want to work harder or smarter and get ahead.
Mm-hmm. So now, basically, as we see, Right to Work is passed in Indiana and in 22 other states. Now, in those states, unions can still exist, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Nothing any state could do would undo that. Federal law guarantees the rights of the unions not only to exist, but to bargain with the employer, and it even still protects the monopoly bargaining system. That is, the union can still force its unwanted contract on people that don't want it. Mm-hmm. All the Right to Work law says is you can't be forced to pay for a contract that you don't want, that you don't think helps you.
That seems pretty basic and pretty simple. I mean,
And that's why 80% of the public agrees with it.
Yeah. Well, okay, so we're going state by state. Obviously, that has to be where the battle is waged to win over Right to Work. You guys are, in terms of our total number of states, are almost halfway there. But there has been the National Right to Work Bill, which has labored in Congress for years. And obviously, with our current president, there is no way we can ever see that passing. With the current makeup of the Senate, there is no way we can even see it even getting a hearing in the Senate. But other than, obviously, a structural shift in the makeup of the Senate and the presidency, what is it going to take for National Right to Work to become a national law? I mean, Republicans held the White House and both chambers of the House and Senate not too long ago. And like with many typical conservative or Republican issues, they did not advance as far as I think a lot of people had hoped. What needs to happen? Pardon?
Well, a couple of things will need to happen. I mean, when we got, as we began this discussion, you know, Indiana was not a 2-year project for mm-hmm. us. It started out, we moved into the state 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the very first meeting we had, maybe not the very first meeting, one of the very early meetings we had was with the Senate President Pro Tem at the time, a fellow named Bob Garton.
Mm-hmm.
We said, you know, we know we can't pass the Right to Work Bill this year. All we need to do is get a roll call vote so we can go to the voters and the constituents and show them who's for Right to Work and who's not. And Bob Garton said to us, as long as I'm in charge of the Senate, you will never get your roll call vote. And so we told that to the voters. And sure enough, Bob Garton was 35-year, I think, incumbent, longest-serving Senate president in American history, was turned out by the voters in favor of a pro-Right to Work candidate.
That's right.
And so at the national level, we really look to do the same thing. We want to force votes on the issue so that we can go to the voters and say, this guy's for Right to Work, this guy's not, and ask the voters to lobby those candidates and ideally either convince people to change their minds or replace bad guys with good guys. I'll take either way.
Obviously. Well, the work – oh, Mark, you had something?
Well, yeah, this is interesting that we're talking about Right to Work and job growth because – Caterpillar just closed a plant in Canada after a union lockout and is moving it to Muncie, Indiana.
Yeah, I just saw that story.
Creating 450 manufacturing jobs.
That is incredible. I mean, just like that, Right to Work is impacting Indiana. I mean, what, I'm sorry, why, it's clear to you, Mr. Murad, it's clear to Mark and me that Right to Work is good for business. Why is it so hard for essentially, seemingly, to get that message out? I mean, once Right to Work came, you know, the votes came out, the unions were down at the state house, they were, you know, picketing, they were making national news, they threatened to protest and picket and block the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. No, they have always had an amazing ability to turn out an angry mob. They're very good at that.
Very good. Yes, they are.
Well, I think it's interesting because it says in this article, it says Caterpillar has made clear it hopes to avoid any union representation at the Muncie plant. Last year, an online job advertisement published by the company sought human resources managers with experience with providing union-free culture and union avoidance.
Exactly. Now, right, here's how Right to Work connects to that, because it's not obvious. Companies want to operate union-free for one very simple reason. When you are forced to write down all of the details of how everything in your shop is going to work, you automatically lose flexibility. You can't tell a guy, okay, well, we don't need you to do this anymore, we need you to do that. You can't do it. The contract locks you in. You have to keep paying that guy to do something you don't need him to do, and you've got to waste that money and then hire somebody else to do what you need done. And that's why companies don't want their workforces unionized. What happens in a right-to-work state is that the employees cannot be forced to pay dues to the union. Now, what does that do? That takes away the union's incentive to unionize, to organize a happy workforce. So all the employer knows, all he's got to do is treat his people well, and they won't unionize.
Mm-hmm.
Because the union has no reason to come in there and try and force itself on these people, because they just won't pay the dues anyway. They don't need a union.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what employers want to see. If I treat my people well, I don't get stuck with that inflexible contract.
Incredible. Again, it seems so basic. I'm sorry, that's just what it comes down to.
It is basic, and overwhelming numbers of the people when polled agree with the principle, and they're happy about the new law. But the unions have a great deal of money at stake, and unfortunately, a whole lot of Democrats are the recipients of that money, and so it translates very quickly into a very powerful political issue for the other side.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that the fight is continuing, and we're obviously, Indiana's very pleased that Right to Work has passed. The fight continues on in New Hampshire and in Montana, and
Michigan and Missouri and Minnesota and Wisconsin and a number of other places as well. Yes,
you have no idea how happy this makes me. I mean, to know that Right to Work is this active in so many states, and I can only hope that Indiana is kind of the rocket booster to help some of these other dominoes fall. In the states that you just mentioned.
Well, we're definitely hoping that too.
Mr. Murad, Greg Murad, from Vice President of the National Right to Work Committee, thank you for being on tonight's show.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
All right, you're listening to Gillespie here on FTR Radio. We'll be right back after these messages.
Fellow conservatives, when you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Mocha Choco whatever in the wacko latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. At HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
And welcome back to Gillespie. This is the segment that everyone has come to know and love as the Ask a Rhino segment. And for the third, fourth week in a row, which I believe Mark is still using as payback, he has not informed me who this week's rhino is. Mark, who do we have this evening?
Well, we don't have a rhino, Josh.
What? What's this? What do you mean we don't have a rhino? It's an Ask a Rhino segment, Mark.
Well, Josh, I decided to switch it up this week and bring on a true conservative.
Bless you, my son. Who do we have?
We have Don Bates running for Congress in the 6th Congressional District here in Indiana.
My man, Don Bates! Don Bates Jr., how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on the show, and I'm honored that it would be renamed the True Conservative segment rather than the Rhino segment.
This is
think there's anything in my record that applies there.
No. In fact, I'm automatically renaming this segment for this evening, the Ask a True Conservative segment. Mark is still the token Rhino, but I am pleased that we actually have a real true conservative on the show this evening, especially one who is running for Congress here in Indiana. He's running for the 6th Congressional District. Don, like I said, thanks for being on the show. How's the campaign going?
The campaign goes well, and if I might, since today is my favorite president, Ronald Reagan's birthday, I just want to quickly say, in honor of him, I remember the day he was elected as an 11-year-old boy jumping around the house screaming my head off. I remember the day he died, but I just want to say he may have died, but his dream for America has not. And that dream lives on in the hearts of millions of Americans who still believe with the right leadership, our best days can be ahead of us. So I wanted to just give a shout out to the memory of my favorite president, who would be 101 today. So happy birthday, Mr. President Reagan.
Incredible. Ronald Reagan was and has been an inspiration for conservatives like Don and me for, gosh, since he was elected president. Some going as far back to when he gave his first Republican National Convention speech for Barry Goldwater. Man, that's right. Today is the Gipper's birthday. So happy birthday to you, Ronnie. We miss you. And there ain't going to be another one like you. But we hope we have someone out there who has the principles like Ronald Reagan. And I think we do in Don Bates Jr. So, Don, yeah, how is the campaign going?
We right now lead the race in elected official endorsements and in Tea Party leaders' endorsements in the district. Mm-hmm. What we believe is that in order to preserve this seat that has been so capably held by a great conservative, Mike Pence, a man who will be a great governor for the state of Indiana, we really believe it's going to take both. And so I'm excited about how things are going. Again, we've worked very hard. I think most people would agree that the Senate race, while I didn't expect this to be the case, honestly, when that Senate race ended, I went back to my life as a financial advisor, not thinking that I would run for political office again, and yet my phone literally rang off the hook with people asking me to stay involved. And so without a doubt, we made a lot of friends in the party, in the district. But not only that, we forged a lot of relationships in the Tea Party, because at heart, I'm with the Tea Party. I was like so many of them who was kicked out of my comfort zone by Barack Obama. So I'm excited about what we're seeing on the ground. The narrative that just continues to grow, and this is not a criticism of any of my colleagues in the race, but the narrative that continues to grow is our district is fiercely independent. And this race will be decided by the people of the 6th District, not by a handful of power brokers in Indianapolis. And I hear that again and again, and it just continues to resonate throughout the district. This is our district. This is our race. When it's all said and done, the voters will decide on May the 8th who the nominee is going to be. And I really am in hopes that with all of the hard work we're putting into this race, that on May the 8th they will decide that our campaign best represents our district, since I'm the only candidate who has lived and worked in the 6th District my entire life, and the candidate who has lived the values of 6th District true Hoosier conservatism his entire life. So, Josh and Mark, I'm really, really thrilled with where things are and how things are going in our race.
Well, Don, I know that we have a bit of a crowded race here in the 6th District. I've actually kind of lost count how many guys seem to be getting in. A lot of, no offense to your challengers, but a lot of nobodies and also-rans who just seem to kind of, I honestly don't know why they're getting in. But they all want to claim the mantle of Mike Pence. What distinguishes you from this field?
Well, I'm very hesitant to look. First of all, Mike Pence is one of my heroes. He's been a mentor. I would be honored to walk in his footsteps, but I'm not worthy to tie his shoes. Let me just be clear. But I think what sets our campaign aside is Josh and Mark. I live here. I work here. I've been part of the 6th District my entire life. I know what we believe. I know what we think. And I've lived that, and I'm the only candidate who can say that. I think also, look at my record. Look at the Senate campaign. Look at everything that I stood for. Look at what I stand for today. I don't think you'll find one inconsistency in one position that I've taken in now the last 3 years that I've been involved in the political process by running for public office. And I think the other thing that's important to remember in this race is Mike Pence has been many times a voice in the wilderness, being willing to even stand against his own party when necessary. He voted against No Child Left Behind. He voted against the Medicare prescription drug plan. He voted against the Wall Street bailouts. And I really do not want to see us lose that seat to an establishment Republican who might have a tendency to be more go along to get along if you look at records. And again, I'm not trying to be critical, I'm just stating facts. And so I want to make sure that our district maintains that independence. It's another reason why I don't believe a handful of power brokers in Annapolis should dictate who our nominee is going to be. Mm-hmm. This race will be decided by the people, and that goes right along with the independent streak that we have and the independent streak that Mike Pence has exhibited in the last 12 years he's been our congressman.
Well, I know that the Tea Party has made the economy one of the pillars of their personal campaign. I know that FreedomWorks was in Indianapolis a few months ago, going along with their budget proposals that they were trying to put together. With your background in the financial industry, you understand budgets, you understand putting things together. How would you approach a budget that is so bloated that by, I believe, the middle of this year, we will be approaching nearly $16 trillion in debt, which is $6 trillion more. I think we're at 15, 15.2, 15.5 right now. We're at $5.5 trillion more in debt than we were 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do as a freshman congressman with your knowledge and skill set to help alleviate some of this burden?
Well, let me share a couple things. First of all, one of my colleagues who's running in this race said some time ago that we want better government, not less government. Well, that's not what the 6th District Hoosiers believe. They believe that government is out of control. Philosophically, I believe that government has a spending problem, not a revenue problem. And I think that's the first thing we have to embrace. I don't believe raising taxes is the answer. I really believe that we have to fundamentally acknowledge the fact that Washington has never had enough money. I've never known a time in my life when Washington said, oh, we've got plenty of money. Never. And I'll be 43 years old the next birthday. So I think that's point number one. Let's acknowledge the fact that Washington doesn't have a revenue problem. Washington has a spending problem. Mm-hmm. Secondly, during the Senate campaign, I was the only candidate who was advocating that Congress lead the way by taking a 5% pay cut. I stand by that, Josh and Mark. I firmly believe that Congress needs to make a statement and do it in a meaningful way. We're asking Hoosiers to tighten their belts because times are tough. Why can't Washington tighten its belt? So Congress take a 5% pay cut. Then I also believe that with the budget, if we went back to 2006 spending levels right now, we would be operating on a balanced budget. Doesn't do anything about the $16 trillion in debt, but it would go a long way to starting us back on the path to fiscal sanity. And then I believe if you cut taxes, it's one of the reasons why I've advocated that we cut the corporate tax rate to zero. Instead of penalizing companies for taking their jobs overseas, let's incentivize them to come back and create jobs right here in Indiana. The 6th District has an above-average unemployment rate in relationship to the rest of the state. It's totally unacceptable. One of the problems has been, though, we were a heavily manufacturing district, and so we've lost a lot of jobs. But let's give business a good reason to come back. And you don't do it by raising taxes. You don't do it by instituting over 2,000 pages of new regulations that the Obama administration's instituted through the EPA. And so if you will give them a good reason to come back to the United States and start creating jobs here, then history has proven that revenues will go up in Washington. Put more people to work, more people on the paying taxes, and we will see more money go to Washington. But Washington must adopt very sound, solid, disciplined spending approaches, and I don't believe that we have enough conservative voices in Washington right now who are willing to make that happen. And as my background's in finance, I remember, you know, I'm reflecting this week because this Saturday we'll have a debate in Henry County, and I'm remembering a few years ago when I first debated with Senator Coates and John Hostetler and now Congressman Stutzman and Richard Daney. And I said to that crowd there in Henry County, the AAA credit rating of the United States is in jeopardy. And I also said this, our enemies have learned that if they cannot defeat us militarily, they will defeat us monetarily. Right after that debate, we sent out a press release saying we're in trouble. Moody's had said we're putting the debt of the United States under review. And we sent out a press release. Of course, most of the media ignored it. Who did this financial advisor think he was? He'd never run for public office before. And yet, Josh and Mark, here we are, not 3 years later, and we have lost our AAA credit rating. And I just personally believe that we've got enough attorneys on Capitol Hill. We need to send someone from Main Street who does have a background in finance, who has a clear understanding of where we are fiscally and what we have to do to get out of the problems we're in.
Mm-hmm. Well, Don, we're approaching the end of our segment here, but where can people find out more about you online?
BatesForCongress.com or Facebook, just my name, Don Bates Jr. Join our fan page, like us, continue to follow this race. It's going to be exciting all the way to May the 8th.
That's right. You can also find him on Twitter, Don Bates, at Don Bates Jr. Don, thanks for being on the show this evening.
Thanks for having me, guys. Always good to talk to you.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Don.
And our first ever Ask a True Conservative segment. You definitely answered the questions. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after these messages. Lead me when I say you'll be lost alone. Liar schemes and soul machines will hang me from my rope. I'm tired of running from what I was into it.
Okay, kids, let's go.
There's just one place to go for all your spatula needs.
Spatula City!
Spatula City!
A giant warehouse of spatulas for every occasion. Thousands to choose from in every shape, size, and color. And because we eliminate the middleman, we can sell all our spatulas factory direct to you. Where do you go when you want to buy name brand spatulas at a fraction of retail cost?
Spatula City!
Spatula City!
And this weekend only, take advantage of our special liquidation sale. Buy 9 spatulas, get the 10th one for just 1 penny. Don't forget, they make great Christmas presents. And what better way to say I love you than with the gift of a spatula?
Spatula City!
Spatula City!
Hello, this is Cy Greenbloom, president of Spatula City. I like their spatulas so much, I bought the company.
Spatula City, 7 locations. We're in the yellow pages under spatulas.
My, where did you get that lovely spatula?
Spatula City, we sell spatulas, and that's all.
FTR Radio salutes some of the great Democrat presidents in the radio era. FTR Radio.
And Welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRRadio.com. With us this segment is Amy Miller. You know her as Amy Vest, Right Wing Conspiracy on the Twitters. How you doing, Amy?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
Doing just fine. Well, you are no stranger to FTR Radio. From what I gather, you are a regular on the Snark Factor with Fingers Malloy and the occasional Thomas LeDuc.
Yep, every Tuesday night at 10 p.m.
Well, then they will be hearing your lovely voice right after this show again, so it's like a double shot of Amy.
Lucky you guys.
I know. Well,
this makes my night awesome, because when I listen to Fingers, then I don't have to listen to Duke's snarly voice the whole time.
Well, this is obviously, we're pre-recording this, and Fingers has the technology and the wherewithal and the brilliance and the capacity to run a live show. So who the heck knows what's going on? We can't just look at what's going on in the chat room and respond to it, like when I called you a tool last week and Duke agreed with me. We don't have that luxury. So we're just going to guess what is going on in the chat room. That Duke is there. He's calling you a tool, and I'm agreeing with him. Pretty much.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Pretty much.
I'll put you guys at CPAC. It's okay.
All right. And speaking of CPAC, this is one of the reasons we have Amy on the show tonight. Amy is a veteran CPAC attender. And there seems to be some rumblings of I think we got Tabitha now. Tabitha?
Hi.
Hi, you've joined Amy and Mark. The segment has already begun. We are about ready to talk about the CPACs.
Perfect. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We saw on the Twitters that you were engrossed in The Voice.
I actually lost track of time. I was upstairs packing.
Well, with us now is Tabitha Hale, new media director from the Franklin Center. Everyone knows Tabitha. I don't need to introduce you. We all know and love Tabitha. I was about to bring up, obviously, CPAC starts this week. Mark and I are traveling out together. We're taking the open road. One of us will survive. Chances are it will be Mark, and he will be the only one attending CPAC out of the two of us. There are rumors. Actually, they're not even rumors. They're pretty blatant about it. We're looking at a possible Occupy CPAC going on this week.
We are.
At least that's what
we are. I'm actually super excited about it.
Really?
Oh yeah.
This is bringing back some of your old DC stuff when you were fighting the unions nose to nose.
Well, we only have to go back to Denver when they tried to take on 175 conservative bloggers there. That turned out real well for them. throwing all their stuff away. I mean, I don't know when they'll realize that attacking conservative bloggers is probably the dumbest group of people that they could ever attack, because it's like catnip for us.
Oh, yeah, and we'll all have our phones and little flip cams and everything else to document the hilarity.
Absolutely.
It'll be the race to who can get their video uploaded the quickest.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
I'm okay with that.
I can see the internet and everything, the Wi-Fi just kind of crashing all of a sudden because everyone's just loading video.
Well, obviously. Because CPAC is such a fine-tuned, well-oiled machine this year, I'm sure that they will be on top of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know of any internet trouble that may have occurred in the past.
Never.
No,
it's been seamless.
It is.
Not once.
It's been seamless, one might say, from the way that they've handled things in the past. But yeah, you're right. This is kind of a foolish endeavor by the occupiers. This isn't just, Denver. With 175. We're talking about, I mean, a CPAC gets thousands of people.
Right. And it's not thousands of people. It's thousands of people and high-profile attendees and Secret Service agents and plainclothes policemen. So if they try to do what they did in Denver, it's gonna be an even bigger show than we had at BlogCon in Denver.
This is going to be fun. essentially is what you're saying. Awesome. This is just going to be fantastic. And what are they going to do? I mean, there is so much room in the lobby. I mean, you got people coming at you from every which direction. And I mean, from what I recall, from Denver. Now, I may be confusing my video because I know that they tried to do something at an AFP event in D.C. as well, where they essentially tried to lock the people inside just by kind of protesting.
That was the AFP event in D.C. I was also there. See, here's the thing, and this is the part that actually does concern me about the situation, is that Occupy Denver and Occupy in a lot of cities is essentially a group of ragtag homeless people. Occupy DC is a little bit different. They're a little better funded. They're a little more connected to unions. The AFL-CIO is blatantly funding a lot of their activity. When they were raided the other day, they stored their stuff at the AFL-CIO offices. The AFL-CIO, from what I understand, is actually renting rooms in the Marriott Wardman where CPAC is being held this year.
No way.
So, yes, for the sole purpose of having a base in the hotel so they cannot be evicted as easily.
Oh my gosh. That's kind of a smart move on their part.
Absolutely is. But that's my point, is that we're not just up against a bunch of homeless people in this situation. It's a little bit different. And you know, these people are a little better organized than I think we've given credit to them before.
Wow.
At least the DC group is.
That's going to be a key point when we do start blogging about this, tweeting about this, uploading these videos, is to emphasize that this isn't a ragtag group of homeless people. These are not grassroots activists. These are union shills funded by unions, and that's going to be really key to fighting this if it does catch on, if they do start to get attention for doing what they're going to do. So I just like to encourage everyone, when you're tweeting, when you're blogging, don't forget this isn't just the occupiers. It's not just the smelly people who've been camping in a park. This is the unions at work.
Wow. So yeah, this is what we're looking at, is a much more well-organized, well-oiled machine than what most of us are used to seeing.
Yeah.
Because I know that the occupiers here in Indianapolis, and Mark, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I keep myself safe on the north side of Indianapolis, whereas you hang out downtown in the center where the action's taking place. But the occupiers in Indianapolis, they are typically, as you mentioned, homeless people. But Mark, if I remember you telling me over the weekend, even the homeless people don't want anything to do with the occupiers. Is that right?
This is a funny story, because there's a lot of, I know a lot of the homeless guys downtown, and you know, I asked a few of them, I said, you know, what's this Occupy stuff that you guys were involved in? And they said, them people are crazy. Plus, they're a bunch of pansies, because they really can't live outside like we do all the time. You know, and
they're being blocked by the homeless people.
Yeah, the homeless people around here are like, yeah, we don't want to be a part of this. Because, one, you guys are just a little too crazy, and two, I mean, at least the homeless guys go in and take a shower. These people don't even do that.
I mean, seriously.
And they just hated them. And this weekend was funny, because Friday night I was downtown for the Super Bowl events, and I was thinking, okay, where are all the protesters at? Because they said there was going to be a bunch of them. Three.
Only three showed up?
Occupy protesters in front of the state house.
That's
three.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Beautiful.
And I was like, oh my God. So I was walking by there with a couple friends, and they're like, Occupy, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, really? There's three of you. Probably wouldn't be bragging about that. And they just kind of gave me a look, and I walked off. But it was, these people are, they're just ridiculous, especially here. And it was the Occupy Kokomo group. I'm like, you drove all the way from Kokomo with Occupy Kokomo signs in Indianapolis. Not the sharpest tools in the shed, aren't we?
You know, when the homeless people are saying, you know, your movement's just a little too much for us, there's something seriously wrong. because, I mean, seriously, you would think that this is the you know, they are literally the 99%. I mean, if you had to find a 99% in America, it would be the homeless. Because even, you know, these so-called occupiers, they, you know, when they're walking around with iPads and MacBooks and everything else under the sun, you know, they're doing fairly well, I would say. These things aren't cheap. Thing,
especially in D.C., they're so well taken care of here. I mean, I remember people getting outraged because there were food trucks coming to drop food off for them. They have catered meals every day. They have, I mean, they were building, do you guys remember when they actually built the shelter here?
Oh, they built a shelter there?
They built a structure. And when somebody, we were sitting in on the GA meetings and the General Assembly meetings, and somebody actually had a little bit of common sense, and they're like, guys, this is a federal park. Is it a really good idea for us to be, you know, building structures? Isn't that a little bit illegal? And won't we kind of waste a lot of money when they tear it down the day after we build it? And these people just started screaming at them, and they're saying things like, whose park is it? Our park! And we're like, okay, no, but really it belongs to the federal government. There's really not much you can do about that. And they ended up, they did this big standoff, and they sat in the rafters of this building so they couldn't tear it down. Eventually, they lost that fight. And they're in the process of evicting them right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a very organized plan to infiltrate and basically make things as complicated at CPAC as they possibly can. And it's going to be a mess. I mean, I think that I don't want to underestimate their ability to wreak havoc, because it doesn't exactly take a genius to run around and pull fire alarms.
Hmm. Well,
and that's all it takes.
My question for you guys now, just kind of switching gears slightly, because I want to keep the topic on CPAC, is that what should people, I mean, because I'm hoping that people who are listening to this show, maybe some of them haven't attended CPAC before. Maybe for some of them, this could be their first time attending. We don't want to scare them off with the whole Occupy CPAC thing, because as you've stated, this is going to be the height of hilarity when it comes down to it. What should people expect for CPAC? I mean, especially you guys are veterans.
I mean, expect on what front? I mean, I expect a lot of Ron Paul people to be running around. I expect a lot of Mitt Romney people to be running around. I expect a lot of people to fight over the presidential race.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And obviously, I'm presuming that the straw poll will again come down to Mitt Romney and Ron Paul as to who can out-tie each other. I mean, seriously, yeah, they're all walking around in blazers and ties. You really can't tell them apart.
Yeah.
It'll all come down to who brings in enough people to stuff the ballot box. I mean, let's be serious.
Well, and also, I mean, CPAC is just, this year, I think in particular, it's going to be a lot of people yelling at each other and trying to out-organize each other and placing way too much credence to the straw poll.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a mess. Mm-hmm. That's my prediction. It's going to be a complete mess, and a lot of people will probably walk away with fewer friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't know about you guys. I know Mark and I are somewhat unaffiliated as far as presidential candidates go, because we still look at this group and we're like, really?
Yeah.
I want Mitch.
I know.
Mitch.
Mark and I desperately want Mitch.
Really? I hadn't picked up on that.
No, recently.
I'm just going to get drunk all week at CPAC. I'm not even going to be functioning. I'm just going to be drunk. That's it. If somebody walks up to me and goes, I love Ron Paul, I'm going to punch him in the mouth.
Mark, but from what I saw on the Twitters today, you got a tattoo of Ron Paul on your right shoulder. Why do you suppress this? You are a secret Ron Paul supporter. I don't know why you just don't come out and tell people.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
I've seen the videos. I've seen the pictures of you with Ron Paul 2012 posters behind you. I can tweet them out again. There is still the incriminating tweet of you on the night of the Iowa caucuses saying that you hope that Ron Paul wins that night, and then you claiming all Anthony Weiner that your account got hacked.
And this is where you will not see Josh Gillespie at CPAC because I will kill him before we get there.
Oh, yeah. See,
say your goodbyes now, folks.
Yeah, it's gonna be 9 hours at the very least, depending on how quickly I can drive or Mark can drive, of this going back and forth. I really don't know what it's gonna be like, but then on top of it all, of Mark and I spending pretty much all day Wednesday in the car together, then we're rooming with Brodigan for 4 days straight.
Oh, Lord, I'm sorry.
Nothing good is going to come from this.
Nothing
no,
good.
No, it's not. I've met Brodigan.
Nothing good is going to come from the CPACs. Although I will say, Brodigan has had a little fun with his show and our website. You know, he's taken the Right Hook and Hoosier Access. He's combined it to our room will be called the Right Access.
All right.
I don't know why, but it's also conveniently located. Next to a lot of things that we think we will enjoy. But this is, see people, this
Brodigan
is...
Brodigan brings me Jack Daniels, so we're friends.
Absolutely. See people, this is what CPAC really is about, bringing people, specifically bloggers, together. All that other stuff is just surface material. The heart of this stuff is after the events in the evening. And the general different events, parties, open houses. Gosh, I don't know how many. There have been a ton of invites going out. I've kind of lost count at this point.
Well, that's the only real reason to go to these things. If we're being honest, you want to go see people and hang out with your friends and call it networking.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And right now I'm in a prime position to network. As my boss recently announced, he's not seeking re-election. So, you know, this is prime networking time,
and
I will enjoy my time at CPAC, just chilling out with friends. You know, looking over the balcony at all the Paulbots and all the the Mitt fans or whatever the heck they're called. I don't what are
Mittbots.
Mittbots. All right, Paul. I admit bots and
Romulans.
I'm
partial to Palestinian. I don't know.
I like Palestinian. I definitely do.
I think
like Palestinian.
Great. Don't ask me why.
Palestinian. That just that encompasses so much. oh man. Well, this is. Well, I hope those who are listening can realize that CPAC is going to be a ton of fun. That there is a lot to cover. There will be constant coverage of CPAC from Hoosier Access. Mark and I will be covering it for Hoosier Access. It'll be covered on Twitter. You can follow Tabitha at Pink Elephant Pun. You can follow Amy at Amy V. Hold on, I'm going to get this wrong, even though I just tweeted you, Amy V. RWC for Vast Right Wing Conspiracy.
Amy underscore. There's an underscore there.
There is?
Oh, I changed it.
You did change
it. Oh,
you
did?
Changed it.
I did. Wait, you changed it? When did that happen?
I changed it. See, it's all you.
Damn, look at me trying to be on top of stuff.
Well, there are obviously going to be so many websites to be following. The Franklin Center's involved this year, aren't they, Tabitha?
We are. A sponsor, not a major sponsor. We've just got a booth, but we are actually hosting a training on, I think, Friday at 11:30. We will be around all weekend with Jason Starock, our president. We'll be present at the Blog Bash on Thursday night. So we'll be around, me and Eric Telford and Mary Ellen Beatty, and they'll be talking about their citizen watchdog program. So we've got a lot going on. We're excited to just be around this year and meet people and talk to people, and I think a lot of people are still learning what the heck we do. It's a pretty funny process. They hired Eric and everybody's like, why did Eric just go over there? And then they hired me, and everybody's like, okay, so what the hell do you guys even do? So we'll tell you.
Well, we're,
you have
yeah.
to wait till Thursday.
Okay, well, there you go. And we'll have to have you on again just to actually talk about, I mean, we had you on. We might as well actually talk about who you work for, you know, give
Maybe.
Them a plug.
Yeah.
So,
Maybe.
All right. Well, okay, CPAC this week, this is what I like to call the special pre-CPAC edition of Gillespie, and then next week we'll have probably weeks and weeks of post-CPAC coverage. Well, this has been such a jam-packed show. I'm going to bring it to a close right now. I want to thank all of my guests this evening. Too many to mention. But I also want to make sure that I cover the music that you heard tonight. You heard Andy Ziff, Soul Food 76, 5 O'Clock People. Amy and Tabitha, thanks for being on the show this evening.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
And stay tuned for Fingers Molloy coming up next. You will be hearing Amy again, but this time live. So, double dose of Amy. All right, you've been listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Thanks for listening in. Stay tuned for Fingers Molloy and the Snark Factor. We'll be back again next week.
Don't speak like you used to. And where do we go to now?